coming up on Path to Zero.
So last year, AI data centers, it was, you know, a lot of excitement about the tech and the energy industries working together to bring all this growth online. And then this year, there is like layer of anxiety over it all.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, President and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, and welcome to Path to Zero, today from our special Houston edition at CERAWeek. Texas is at the center of some of the biggest energy stories in the country right now, from grid reliability and rising demand to shifting fuel sources and growing costs for consumers. Claire Howell has been covering all of it as an energy and power grid reporter for the Houston Chronicle. Claire, thanks so much for joining us on our special edition of Path to Zero from Houston and CERAWeek.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Been covering it all week. I know you've been deeply immersed into it. What kinds of trends or conversations are you hearing here that maybe surprised you, or maybe ones that didn't surprise you?
Well, in the space that I cover, which is primarily, you know, the power sector, of course, data centers, the AI power demand is still a huge part of the narrative at the conference. It feels like AI is in every single panel. It's like an energy and tech conference, basically, at this point. I think you're definitely starting to see some of the, you know, the grassroots opposition to data centers across the country. Like, you can tell that executives are thinking about that. That's probably the biggest difference from, you know, this year to last year. So last year, AI data centers were also a huge part of the conversations on stage, but it was, you know, a lot of excitement about how much demand there was, the growth that the industry would see, about like the tech and the energy industries working together to bring all this growth online. And then this year, there is like this like layer of anxiety over it all, as like residents start to push back, either because they're concerned about water use or rising electricity costs, or, you know, what the strain is on the grid. And so I don't know if I was necessarily surprised by that, but it was something I took note of as like maybe the, like a, yeah, just something that definitely wasn't present last year.
A real shift from last year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, I was thinking about it as you were speaking. I live in Virginia, which has been the home of data centers. Mm-hmm. You sit here in Texas, which is soon probably to be the new home of data centers. I think both of us are dealing with it in different ways. But as you see the narrative unfolding about, we really do need more infrastructure, we need more data centers, Texas seems to be responding to it in a very different way. Maybe talk about that. Do you see a lot of bring your own power plants? Do you see your local utilities responding to the needs? How will data centers in Texas particularly, how will they get their power?
Yeah, so this is, it's really interesting that, you know, you have the Virginia perspective. Because now Texas, various reports are predicting that Texas could overtake Virginia perhaps in the next couple of years as the largest global hub for data centers. We're kind of neck and neck right now in terms of projected projects. So one thing that I'm hearing, for example, from like the Data Center Coalition and the companies that are wanting to, you know, either develop these data centers or lease that space, is that this new generation of data center, the AI data centers that require just a lot more power, a lot more land, those are coming to Texas, rather than maybe like traditional data center alley or even Dallas. I mean, Dallas definitely certainly has its share of AI data centers, but, you know, the data center alley in Virginia and Dallas, they, grid capacity is starting to become a constraint. And so they're seeking places where they can still get power from the grid, but even here in ERCOT, which is, you know, it's faster to get online and than in other places. So for example, in ERCOT, usually maybe it's about a 3-year wait to be in that interconnection queue. In Virginia, it's about 7 years. Even in ERCOT, we're just seeing such a huge wave of data centers trying to get connected to the grid that ERCOT has had to slow down its processes. And that's made a lot of data center companies and hyperscalers try to find what there are a lot of them are trying to find this, what they call a bridge to a power grid connection. It does like that. That was something also that I heard repeatedly at CERAWeek was that ultimately it seems like most companies are still interested in that powered grid connection. They, you know, that's an extra layer of reliability. You don't have to like just depend on your own on-site generation for power.
Which is really difficult to have, what, 6 nines, I guess, five nines is for sure what they look for.
Mm-hmm. But at this point, you know, if they don't want to wait years to connect to the grid, then bring your own generation is a must. And even, you know, as they want to wait to connect to the grid, as there's this growing backlash towards the data center build out about, you know, what will it do to electricity costs, bring your own generation too has become this like way for data center developers and hyperscalers to say that, you know, we're committed to bring our own capacity. And so that's also why Texas is becoming a hub for data centers. Is because, I mean, Texas, it's just easier to build large-scale infrastructure. We have one grid operator, you know, ERCOT, so it's a single market for most of the state, which is just a lot. ERCOT is its own market, largely because it helps avoid some federal regulation that other states see, and also, you know, like a market like PJM, that's over a bunch of different states with a bunch of overlapping or different regulations. And then also, it's just easier to get, like, for example, air pollution permits from the environmental regulator here. So if companies want to build their own power plant for their data center, it's faster to do that. I mean, a huge part of why so many of these data centers who are either looking to bypass the grid or just like find this bridge power solution before they can get that grid connection or coming to Texas is because Texas has really ample natural gas. West Texas has become really attractive as a place to build this, these own power plants for data centers as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're blessed with ample land, affordable land, great solar potential, great wind potential. Fairly easy permitting compared to other states, and then, as you said, a single point for the electrical grid permitting. Any one of those stand out as the reason people are coming here, or is it all of them kind of in concert?
I think, you know, the primary thing is speed to power, and so in whatever speed to power means, Texas is usually faster, whether that's waiting in line to connect to the grid. Also, it's faster to add new power generation to ERCOT. We're really adding new power capacity at a rapid clip, and most of that new power capacity is solar and storage. And, you know, because it's easier to build those projects in Texas, because Texas really has abundant sunshine, abundant land. It has an energy market that, you know, is really favorable to new solar, new storage. And then, you know, if you wanted to have that bridge power solution where you bring your own generation until you can get that grid connection, then also, you know, it's easier to build that power plant. You have ample natural gas to be able to fuel that power plant. So I think the main thing is definitely the access to power and the speed at which you can access power. And then, you know, a growing reason why maybe Texas is becoming attractive is like as data center backlash grows, Texas is one of those places where, you know, even as there is growing concern or opposition, it's still easier to get through that permitting process and build.
Yeah, absolutely. You didn't talk about water much other than data centers do tend to consume water. Is that generally a concern in Texas as you see the proliferation of data centers? Do you worry? I mean, you're kind of water starved as it has been. Do you see that a concern for the future?
I think that's definitely one of the main sources of this grassroots backlash that we're seeing here in Texas, if not the main reason. I think, like, sometimes, you know, the grid, electricity, it can be more of an abstract concept, but people, you know, they know, they see their local lake, or right. they have the water come out of their tap, and it feels like a much more existential, maybe, threat if they feel like they're going to lose or, like, their water source is going to be more scarce or less secure in some way. So I think that's when I, like, talk to, you know, residents or community groups who are opposing data centers or opposing transmission build out, which, you know, is largely to accommodate this growth that we're seeing here in Texas, water kind of continually comes up as one of their main concerns. You know, the data center industry will say that they use less water than other industries, such as, like, golf courses or car washes. They'll say that, you know, they're moving to more efficient, less water-intensive cooling methods. But at the same time, just given the scale of data center growth that we're seeing, you know, there is going to be a growth in the right. amount of water that this industry requires from the state of Texas. I think one concern that I've heard from some environmental groups is that there needs to be more transparency into how much water data centers are really needing as they come to Texas, and also more of, like, more coordination around, like, more planning from a statewide perspective right. of so we can, and also especially to maybe some of these data centers, you know, like West Texas faces drought conditions, but that's also where the natural gas is. So right. are there places in Texas that may not be as suitable for data centers if they need a lot of water? So state regulators, you know, they're starting this study of how much water do data centers really use. They're trying to gather data on that. And just today, the Texas House of Representatives, they released their, like, priorities, essentially, for what they're going to look into before the next legislative session starts. And data center water use is actually one of those priorities. So it's something that, yeah, our legislature has signaled it's interested in as well.
Talk a lot about data centers and the impact on the grid. What do you see the conversation being around the shiny objects that are going to provide that power? You know, from years past, you know, hydrogen's been the answer. There was a time long ago where we were just beginning to really understand solar, wind. Where do you see the supply side to meet that demand is going to be? Is it really all about nat gas, solar and battery? Is that kind of where it is? Or is the conversation finally turning to nuclear power, SMRs, maybe some other technologies? What's the buzz?
Yeah, well, at CERAWeek, it seems like all the discussion around data center power demand has been on natural gas. There, you can definitely see, like, an excitement in the resurgence of, and this, like, extra layer of demand for natural gas. But I think, and there's definitely this year just a much smaller presence, both on, like, you know, the main stage panels and just, like, in the room among renewable companies, which I found interesting. I think, you know, maybe, like, a, you know, it's a sign of the times, like a tone of kind of where energy policy is right now. But, you know, analysts will, like, for example, I spoke with some S&P analysts this week, and they'll point out that most of the new power capacity that's been added in this country is solar and storage, and that's not likely to change, even with some of the challenges that the industry has seen this year, whether it's tariffs or, you know, some of the big, beautiful bill pressures or otherwise, or, you know, permitting issues. There's just so much power demand that's coming. You know, we talk a lot about data centers. We've talked a lot about today, but also from onshoring of manufacturing, from electrification more generally, population growth, extreme weather, that the demand for this resource is still robust, and it's still, you know, solar plus storage is still competitive. And so it's still going to be built. A lot of it is still going to be built. And, you know, you look at the ERCOT interconnection queue, most of it is still solar and storage. But there definitely is also, you know, an uptick in the number of natural gas power plants that are being planned, especially for data centers that are trying to build their own power generation. They believe that, you know, they need this power 24/7, and the cheapest, fastest way to get 24/7 power is going to be natural gas. And so definitely, like, lots of companies that are announcing plans to build, but also that means the supply chain for natural gas power generation is constrained. And then, you know, this is creating a lot of excitement around next generation geothermal, next generation nuclear. A lot of the companies who have announced nuclear projects, though, don't see themselves as maybe bringing online their first project until 2030 or beyond. So that was something also that I heard repeatedly at these panels, is that I think someone said today that nuclear is a solution and an answer for the next decade of power demand, but not a near term.
Yeah, 2030 would be ridiculously wildly optimistic, right?
I mean,
you just think about permitting alone, or even what's going on, but yeah, maybe 2040 to me feels more likely. So you, to your point, next decade stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, you know, and the race, this AI race that these tech companies view themselves in, you know, against each other, against China, they're really looking at it as like, we have to build out these data centers and find power for these data centers in the next 5 years or so, you know, by 2030, 2031. And so, you know, some nuclear companies are saying that they will be able to be up and running by those time frames, but I think a lot of folks don't really think that that's the near-term answer.
Yeah. I would guess that you are tired of answering this question, but I have to ask it anyway because it's right in your wheelhouse. You know, we looked at Texas performance through Winter Storm Uri. We looked at the changes that happened, and this winter seemed to be a really good test for, is the grid in a better space than it was for Uri? And you certainly came through this winter with very little problem. Talk about how you've seen kind of the attention to the grid, the changes that were made that allow you to be a bit more resilient in some of those peak periods, principally the winter periods.
Yeah, well, Winter Storm Fern, I believe that's what the Weather Channel has called it, and that happened this last January.
Right.
You know, there weren't bulk power system issues in Texas, so there weren't like ERCOT-level outages. We had some outages in some parts of the state, particularly in the east, related to just like icing on neighborhood power lines. That storm came kind of interestingly close to the five-year anniversary of Winter Storm Uri. And so I think there definitely was some deja vu and some, you know, just an unsettling kind of fear, definitely. When I was in Houston, you know, in the preview to that storm, like, the shelves were empty with water, with firewood. So folks are definitely still have PTSD from Winter Storm Uri. And ERCOT has this really interesting chart where they show just like all the winter storms we've had since Winter Storm Uri in 2021. And it's on one axis is the average temperature, average lowest temperature across the state. And then the other axis is like number of hours below freezing. And so all of the storms we've had since Winter Storm Uri are kind of up here. And then Winter Storm Uri is this outlier. And it's just like in that bottom right corner where it was both
below
really, really cold.
Yes. For a long time.
Both really, really cold and for a very long time. So ERCOT, you know, they'll say we haven't had a storm like Winter Storm Uri since that storm.
So Fern didn't really recreate the conditions of Uri.
No, I mean, it wasn't a real repeat. That's not to say that, like, you know, the grid hasn't improved. It's just that it hasn't been tested under the same conditions that we've seen yet. So the improvements are, you know, there has been new weatherization requirements for power plants, and the data shows that these power plants are performing at higher levels in storms. Again, like, these winter storms haven't been as cold as Uri, but still they're not, you know, suffering outages at the same level. ERCOT has basically what more of what they call ancillary services, which are kind of like backup reserves of power. They'll buy more of these ahead of time and be able to deploy them to manage any, you know, unexpected issues, like if a power plant suddenly goes offline or like has to reduce a little bit or like demands a little bit higher than forecast. So we have seen, and also like maybe one of, you know, the most critical improvements is that during Winter Storm Uri, there was this like really bad effect where the natural gas system that was supplying the power plants lost power. And then that just made the outages even worse. It made it even harder to bring the system back online. So now, you know, those natural gas facilities are mapped. They're designated as critical. They can't lose power. So that has helped just, you know, bring more confidence in the grid to be able to do better in a Winter Storm Uri repeat. But yeah, for the 5-year anniversary of Winter Storm Uri, I did this story where I kind of asked, like, what are the areas where we have improved? And if we did see another similar storm, what would happen? And from most of the folks I talked to, the consensus was like, we would do better, but will we like completely be fine? Not quite sure. Yeah.
You need that. You'll need to see that colder weather for a longer period of time before you really are comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Well, from the outside looking in, it looked like you had done much better. And I thought you might say one of the things, at least the addition of solar and wind seemed to help.
Yeah.
Texas has done a good job, I feel like, of when they add solar, they add some long-duration storage.
Mm-hmm. I think, and so this is something that the ERCOT CEO has talked about, that the addition of solar and storage has really helped, especially during the summer when sun's beating down in Texas. Right. It's plenty hot. It's helped mitigate those peak demand hours in the summer. But solar is less effective in generating as much power during the winter. And he's worried that, you know, battery storage wouldn't be able to store enough power if we were to have multiple like long days of freezing temperatures that were also, you know, relatively little sun. So you know, our state policymakers still believe that we need more natural gas power plants to meet peak demand. You know, some groups are also really advocating for improving energy efficiency in the state so we can lower peak demand from where it would be if, you know, when it's really cold, everybody here turns on their heaters, and we have a lot of really inefficient heaters in Texas that use a lot of power. So yeah, I would say like definitely solar and storage, especially in the summer, has added to the reliability of the grid. But winter is a different type of challenge.
It's amazing the difference in a summer peak and a winter peak and the times they occur and the duration. It's very different operation of the system. Winter peaks generally occur early in the morning when you have almost no wind, almost no solar. It's a very interesting thing. Mm-hmm. And as you said it earlier, it's not just about data center demand. It's certainly about increased electrification, more transportation demand, a lot of things coming together to drive more demand. That's good. You had a good run this winter. Let's give you the magic wand question, because I feel like you see a lot, you hear a lot of conversations. If we were to give you a magic wand and allow you to use it one time for one thing in the next 1 year that you think would have the biggest impact on getting to a more stable grid, a cleaner climate, a more resilient energy system, how would you use that wand?
Well, this is hard because I'm not really supposed to have opinions. I think there is a lot of confusion still in Texas around the grid, our electricity markets, you know, how it works.
Is it misinformation or just a lack of understanding generally?
I think, there definitely is misinformation. I mean, you know, not just in energy, not just on the grid, like the way that our information ecosystem works now, it's increasingly harder to make
news financially sustainable. And so we see a lot of unsourced information on social media that is either, you know, accidentally misleading or deliberately so. And it's just harder and harder, I think, for people to access credible information. So that's one. I think also like the Texas electricity market really is like very complicated. You know, I spend my days learning about it, and but most people don't. Like most people, they turn on their light switch and right. they expect the light to be on, or once a month they pay their power bill. And like maybe when it's about to get really cold or we're about to have a hurricane, they worry about power outages and they stock up. And they don't. And the fact that the Texas electricity market is deregulated, you know, you have a different company that you, in most parts of Texas, that you choose your power plan from, then you, might be responsible for the thunderstorm that outage that, right. you know, is affecting your home from like the companies that own the power plants. Like there's so many different players. I think a lot of people, like they don't, might not even understand like what really is the grid. And then you add data centers onto it, and AI and AI anxiety. I think there is just still a lot of confusion and fear around the space. So I guess if I had a magic wand and I could change something about in the next year, just somehow finding a way to build an information ecosystem that is credible and financially viable and that is also accessible.
Right.
So,
yeah, wonderful. And it's funny you talk about how complex it is in Texas. Add on FERC right. and a balancing authority that you add on levels and think about someone in Missouri or Pennsylvania. It's even more complex.
Right.
And I do think very few people understand how to make power, transmit power, distribute power, what goes on when you use it. Cycles, frequency, it's very, very complicated. I think people who spent their life in the power industry sometimes don't even realize how difficult it is. Mm-hmm. So that's great. We hope you get your magic wand. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for most people, they just, as we are, you know, experiencing more outages because of extreme weather, and as the electricity costs are rising and that's becoming a more painful part of, you know, folks' budgets, and as data centers are being proposed in their communities, these are issues that they really do care about. We do definitely right. see a lot of reader interest. And so, yeah, I think just people in the industry, I mean, they might not realize how interested folks are in what they do. And a lot of people in the industry use so much jargon that it can be hard for that to translate. There's not a lot of like back and forth, you know, between right. the industry and everyday folks. So that's what I hope to be a bridge for. But yeah,
it's very complicated. And, mm-hmm. and I think good reporting does help at least clarify the issues one by one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. I mean, one of the issues I see all the time is, will data centers be net good for the grid? And will they cause the grid to become cheaper for consumers? Or in fact, will they make the grid less reliable and drive up costs? I think the answer is probably not one answer fits all, right? I think mm-hmm. it very much depends on, does your grid have excess capacity? Who's the data center? But it's a really complicated story. And I notice in Virginia, as we are beginning to talk to consumers about it, commercials run on TV that air both sides of that. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, you should support data centers. They're going to drive up reliability and drive down cost. No, you shouldn't support data centers because they're going to drive down reliability and drive up cost. It's a very complicated issue.
Right. I mean, I think the answer is more so it depends. Yeah. But that's a longer, more nuanced
yeah.
answer to explain. And it's hard for, I think, a lot of everyday people to really sort out what is right. happening in the space.
My answer is we have been through decades of underinvestment in things we should have invested in, perhaps newer power plants, certainly transmission line upgrades. and the demand that we see coming to the grid, wherever that demand comes from, it could come from you using inductive cooking, or you using an electric vehicle, or you building a industrial facility, whatever, that's going to require a lot more investment than we have been making in the past. Mm-hmm. And historically, costs have to rise, I think,
right,
to support that investment.
I mean, we hear it, like I spoke with the CEO of, or the incoming CEO, I should say, he's currently the president of NRG this week, and he, you know, he acknowledged that prices are going to have to rise just given the fact that we are seeing so much power demand come on at this speed, and that we have to invest so much in infrastructure. And even, you know, there was a Texas panel yesterday, and the head of our utility commission was on that panel. And he said that what he hears from residents is that they feel like whatever they're paying in their electricity bill, they're not getting what they're paying for in terms of like the reliability that they're looking for, the resiliency that they're looking for. So if costs are going to rise, which, you know, it seems like there's some consensus around the fact that that's likely, I think then the question that every people outside the industry are asking is, then like, what do I get from the fact that I'm paying more? What is the benefit of this? And I think that's what the industry is trying to answer right now.
It's a difficult question and a really difficult answer for them. We love to plant a tree in a national forest in honor of the time you spend with us, your expertise. We'll continue to kind of work with you as in our circle of friends. Is there a particular national forest that you would love to see a tree planted in your name?
I think the Sam Houston National Forest is nearby. I think that is a national forest.
Okay, what we'll do, our producer, Russ Ray, loves to solve that problem. He has lots of ideas, a native Texan himself. So we'll let you and he confer behind the scenes, but there certainly is the Sam Houston Forest and a few others. So we'll work on that, but I just cannot thank you enough. Before you leave us, anything else you want to tell our listeners about something you're working on, a trend you're thinking about, how they can learn more about your reporting with the Chronicle?
Yeah, well, you know, if you're interested in reading more of our work, you can look me up and you can find my author page. And, you know, if you have a story idea, a tip, or just any feedback, you can reach me at my first name, which is Claire, dot my last name, Howe, at HoustonChronicle.com.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Claire, for being with us on Path to Zero.
Yeah, thanks again.